a Meyer-Smith alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 23rd, 2008. And I want to thank Ryan for sharing. He told my story. I think this time last year I was still shaking and still, you know, I was like 4 days sober and terrified of this group and terrified of everything that it involved. And there are particular people that stuck out to me who I related with and who I really think I owe a lot to. And this person that's going to speak for me tonight, he's brought so much joy into my sobriety. I remember coming in and being like, I'm never going to have fun again. I'm never going to be able to have fun. I'm just going to be drinking ginger ale and doing nothing. This is miserable. And this particular person brought an immense amount of joy to me, like right from the start. And I can't wait to continue that. You know, I'm working now on my second year, which is cool. And I can't wait to see what unfolds with everybody in the program. And without further ado, I will give you Bill.
Bill, alcoholic.
Please remember this on call.
I am an alcoholic, and it's Thanksgiving, and I got a lot to be grateful for. I don't know. I'm just glad to be here, part of the group that I didn't want to have anything to do with. But I started drinking at 14. I was in AA at 18. So, all right. I don't know, but I felt like I got ripped off because I really like drinking. You know what I mean? I'm glad that I didn't mess around when I was drinking. I started drinking, like I said, 14. My first drink was Carlo Rossi wine. It was $6 a gallon. It's about $8 a gallon now. So I started out, in the upper echelon of drinking, I guess. But all I remember was drinking and smiling. That's the main thing I remember. I remember feeling, my face smiling. Because I was the kind of kid, I never smiled. I was preoccupied with the nuclear holocaust that I was sure going to happen any day. I was just I've been called the most negative man in AA. And, it just gets a little bit better every day. But, I don't know. It's just funny. I was thinking on the way here, I was thinking about my sponsor telling me, when I just got a year. And he was like, or maybe I didn't even have a year. I don't know. But he was basically just telling me that if I put AA first, that everything else would take care of itself, because I was trying to get a job. I know why I'm thinking about this now. I heard somebody talking about having a felony on their record. And at the time, I didn't have a felony, but I thought I did. But anyway, I was like, I'm never going to be able to get a job. I'm going to be in AA, going to be hanging out at Perkins for the rest of my life. Kind of like that. So we didn't even have Starbucks back then. My sobriety date is May 25th, 1985. So I haven't had a drink since then, which means, AA works is what that means. Because it's definitely nothing that I did except for show up and take suggestions and do things that I really didn't want to do a lot of times. God, it's amazing when I think, I always enjoy speaking for the most part. And I remember the first time I was going to speak, I hid out in the bathroom hoping that they'd get somebody else to speak. Like I was purposely late, Like I'd make myself hit all the lights on the way to the meeting so that, they'd get somebody else. And then when I saw they hadn't started, I went in the bathroom and just stood in there, hoping then I came in, they go, there he is, when I walked in, so I had to talk, and I sweat so bad, I was about to die, but I'm bouncing all around, but what my sponsor was saying was, just if I put A first, everything would, take care of itself, and that's been my experience, it really has. It doesn't mean I haven't thought that isn't how it's going to go down, and I guess where the progress is now is when I think that, I just start laughing, and I think, well, it's only worked for the last 24 years, I guess it'll stop tomorrow, it's just funny, and how easy it is for me when I see other people, and I'm like, man, if they stay sober, it's going to be great, it's going to be better than they could ever imagine. And a thing that a buddy of mine says at another meeting, he says that, his higher power has him on a need-to-know basis, and that's kind of how I want to know how everything's going to turn out, I want to read the end of the book, see how it's all going to turn out, but it doesn't work that way for me, but I did drink, and we'll get through that as quickly as possible. I won't try to go into too great detail, but I will. I got my first DUI when I was 17. It was on a road, like Dale Mabry, I guess. And the reason I got the DUI, I thought I was for getting a beef and cheddar. It turns out I was drunk was the reason I got the DUI. I cut off a state trooper, almost caused an accident. You know, at the time I had my uniform on. I had a camouflage army coat and a bandana on. And I knew that I'd been profiled. I knew that the reason I'd been pulled over is because I looked like I did drugs. And so I was really upset with the cop. And, you know, I wasn't much of a badass, but I did my best, you know what I mean? I just kind of gave him some attitude, like, I can't believe this. Like, you know what I mean? There's people out robbing banks right now, you know, doing home invasions or whatever, and you're I'm trying to get home. This is so, what a waste of the taxpayers' money, you know, kind of thing. So anyway, I got a DUI, DWI back then, and I was 17, so I had to go to juvenile, like, counseling, and that's the first time I saw the dreaded alcoholism poster, you know, with the chart and all that stuff, and I remember just thinking, how stupid is this? You know, I just thought it was really dumb, and I would smoke a lot of pot before I'd go to it, because it made it more amusing, and, you know, I don't know, I just went about my business. I was walking, again, hitchhiking, actually, up in Ohio, and it was kind of like Lakeland, where I grew up. It was real rural, and I wore the camouflage, which was funny. My dad would always get on me, because he'd almost run over me, and he'd be like, why do you wear camouflage? You know, because it's all like, you know, trees and stuff where we live, so I look like a bush on the side of the road or something, and I was usually weaving and stuff, but I remember he'd just yell at me, we're going to find you drunk in some ditch somewhere, which, you know, and I just thought he was so dramatic, you know, and the truth was, that's usually where I was. I mean, I was always getting woke up. You'd be getting your morning paper, you'd find me out by the mailbox, you know, face down in your driveway, and I'd just be like, be cool, I'm going, I'm leaving, you know, and, you know, it's just a drunk, you know what I mean, I was just a nuisance is the best way to describe me, and, you know, I remember a couple other incidents, I always blacked out, you know, and it's funny to me now looking back, because I remember when I went through my first treatment center, I was just like, it's just thought it was so ridiculous, like, I'm an alcoholic, and I saw my paperwork, I looked over the doc, it said acute alcoholism is what it said on my chart. I was like, dude, I'm a drug addict, like, you know, don't offend me, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, and back then we had all kinds of cute terms, like, I think actually I was chemically dependent. That sounds nice, doesn't it? And it's real clean. Alcoholic just has that, you know, it just doesn't taste good. Just sounds like dirty old bum, you know what I mean? You know, under a bridge, you know, I mean, at least that's what I thought. You know? Okay. I don't know. I did a couple stories. I remember one time drinking Mad Dog, you know, and I remember this older guy bought it for me. He's like, are you sure that's what you want? And what I had done is I went in and did research, you know. I looked what had the most alcohol, and I saw this, you know, and it also says the wine of the century. I still remember these things. I didn't know it was a wine I was drinking. You know, I just knew $2.50, wine of the century, 20% alcohol. So I get it. It tastes like nasty cough syrup, so I chug the whole thing. And my buddy in front has taken like one sip. I'm like, man, give me a drink of yours. He's like, no, you got a whole bottle. I'm like, give me a sip of yours. And so I traded him some marijuana or something for it, and I chugged his whole bottle. You know, next thing you know, I'm on the back of a VW Bug. They're doing donuts, and I don't remember the rest, but it began a pattern, you know, where the next day I have to call people and ask questions. And I'm sure some of you out here, if you drink like me, have done the detective work. Like, hey, you know, it was pretty crazy last night, you know? And that's all you say, and you're hoping they'll, like, tell you what happened. And usually just utter disgust, and they're like, you don't remember, do you? You know, I'm talking to, like, 16, you know, 15, 16 years old. They're like, you don't remember, do you? Like, man, you know, and they're just basically, they don't even have to, they're just saying, you suck, you suck, you suck. I'll just break it down like that. And they wouldn't tell me what I did usually, you know what I mean? And it just was bad, you know, and you know, stuff like that. As soon as I got my license back, I thought it was going to be totally different. I wasn't going to, you know, get another DWI because I'm walking in the snow and everything again and just thinking how much it sucks, people throwing bottles at me and firecrackers and stuff. You know, it just sucks, man. It sucks being a drunk. But anyway, I'm like, you know, I got all these plans. So I get my license back. I don't even think I had them back like 2 weeks. The first adventure I had was, another big dialogue with my old man that we used to always have would be my car. You know what I mean? He'd be like, what happened to your car? And I'd be like, what do you mean? You know what I mean? And I'd have no idea. You know, I would wreck my car like every night. And I did. People wouldn't even ride with me. They would walk rather than ride with me. But this one time what happened is I had dropped something I was smoking. And I went to get it, and I went left to center, and I go through a cornfield about 50 miles an hour. And I would have these things happen all the time. You know what I mean? I would about have a heart attack. You know what I mean? Everything clears up, and you're like, okay, nobody saw. You know, no cell phones, thank God. And you get back on the road. The car's kind of, the alignment's all screwed and everything. You're like, I can drive. It's cool. You know, nobody will notice, you know. Anyway, the old man, you know, he's always checking my car. He's like, what were you doing driving in a cornfield? And I'd always be lying to him. You know, I'd be like, I haven't been in a cornfield, you know, face to face. He's like, yeah, you were. I'm like, no, I haven't. You know, and so he goes out, gets under the car, pulls the corn stalk out. And I'm just like, well, I'm your son. If you don't believe me, you know, screw you, kind of thing. I mean, we would have that like daily, you know. And I mean, I look back now and it's like, I wonder, it's just insulting when you're a kid how stupid you think your parents are, at least if you're a drunk, you know. The other thing that me and my dad would always have is we lived on a farm, which meant there was work, and I don't like that either. So I always had to break tools so I didn't have to do work. You know, like I was supposed to cut the grass, man, I'd go out and accidentally bust the spark plug off with my foot, you know, or take the post hole digger and just bust it in half, you know. He'd be like, why didn't you dig all this hole? Like, it broke, dude, and I'd just hit the road, man, start hitchhiking, you know, get out of there. And I mean, I'd have nowhere to go. I mean, I'd be out in the tree line, we had a farm, watching him work, freezing to death. And I'm not drunk or high or anything, I'm thinking, I'm not working. And that's, you know, my alcoholic mentality, that when I'm not drinking, I still think that way. You know what I mean? I'll do five times as much work to get out of doing a little bit of work if I don't think I should have to do it, kind of thing. But, so yeah, life's hard for me. But, let's see here. Another one I was thinking about, you know, in the big book where they talk about the double life, and the story that always makes me think of that is, you know, I'm 17 now. I share a room with my brother. He does things like, I mean, he just pisses me off. He does things like, he works. He saves money, you know. When it came time for me to get a car, my parents were like, we'll buy you a car. You know, I don't have a car because, you know, I got one, but I can't drive it. They're like, we'll buy you a car. We got your brother a car. He's like, no, Mom, I've got money for my job. I'll buy a car with my money. I remember looking at him like, I will kill you. You know what I mean? And that's the kind of stuff I would do. I mean, I would never look at like he was just doing his thing. I would really seriously believe, like, you're buying a car to make me look like a bum. You know what I mean? I would really think that. And I'd be like, you know, you want to get drunk and do drugs like me. You know? And he didn't. You know, I remember I got him high once and he was just like, man, it just makes me feel stupid. You know? And I thought, you are weird. You know what I mean? I mean, I was like, I thought I was doing something good for him once, you know? But anyway, me and my friends, we're standing around smoking cigarettes, you know, 17, I'm cool. And all of a sudden, this is what I get to hear out of the door, you know. I wet the bed a lot, you know, and I can only flip your mattress so many times, so my mattress is getting pretty rough, so I switched it with my brother's, you know. I figured he wouldn't mind. You know, so I'm out there with my friends, and through the screen door, I hear, Mom, Billy switched his pee mattress with my mattress, you know. And I got like five of my friends standing there, man, you want to talk about, I would have shot myself if I had a gun, you know, on my person. But instead, I just beat the hell out of him and, you know, accused him of being a liar. But, you know, that's a classic example, you know, the image I'm trying to portray and reality, you know. Got my license back, and, you know, I had all these plans, like I said, how I'm not going to get a DUI, I'm going to have a designated driver, I'm just going to drink in the basement, you know, I'm not going to leave the house, you know, all these plans, you know. What ended up happening was, you know, my dad kind of tripped me out. My dad was like, my mom and dad were having this big, we were having like a family meeting, which was always a blast, you know. My mom's like, he's on drugs, you know, and I got my hair pulled up, I'm on drugs, you know, and you know, she'd say, the whole house smells like marijuana. I'd be like, how do you know what marijuana smells like? You know, what kind of people are you hanging out with, you know? Because, I mean, my parents were split up, and my dad traveled, so, you know, my poor mother, I blamed her for everything, you know, and I did. I just blamed her for everything, and I would play them against one another, you know, because you have to. If you're drunk, you intuitively know how to do that. You know, get money from mom, get money from dad, you get them fighting with each other so you can get away with what you're doing. You know what I mean? Take the heat off me. I'm like, yeah, dad, she's crazy. She forced you, remember? You know, and whatever it takes, you know. So anyway, my dad, I remember this, I'll never forget it. My dad was like, look, you're 18 now. He's like, I don't want to see you get another DUI. You're looking at 10 days in jail. You know, you're going to lose your license for like 2 years. If you drink, just call me. And I remember I almost started crying, like, I love you, dad. You know what I mean? It's like, he goes, just call me. He goes, I'll either get you a taxi or I'll come get you. And I was like, awesome. You know, and my mom's like, you shouldn't drive. You know, because I have no good reason to drive other than to kill people, you know. Flip my car. I mean, I didn't have a job. I mean, there was no reason for me to drive a car. You know, I was just a drunk. You know, I mean, I was. This is terrible. But I drove in blackouts all the time. So anyway, you know, I go out that night, and I tell all my friends, like, can you get to you? This is awesome. And I remember, I always think of Bill's story when he's like, goose hung on. And I was just so, like, cocky, you know what I mean? It only lasted about 4 hours. But, you know, I was like, this is awesome. I don't have to worry about getting a DUI. So my brain's on the ball. So I'm used to it. Anyway, you know what I mean? I'm telling all my friends, like, I can't get a DUI, dude. I don't have to worry about it. My dad will pay taxes. That night and got drunk and got a DUI. You know, I had people with me that begged and let me drive. You know, I mean, I remember my feeling really wasted. No way, you can't drive this thing. You know, flipped the Mustang. You know, 5 hours later, there's the old man. And I know all you know this one, too. Your dad, your mom, or whoever comes to retrieve you. You know what I mean? They just look at you like you are such, you know, crap, you know? And I remember thinking, like, I would rather stay in jail than ride home with you. This is more friendly here, you know? And we rode home, and a buddy of mine was in a 28-day treatment center. And I was making fun of him earlier that day, you know. He's like, Bill, I think we have a drug problem. I go, dude, you got a drug problem. You're in that hospital. And I did a bong hit from the phones over here. And that's the kind of friend I am, you know. But, you know, it was just crazy. So I went in there. And I mean, I didn't go in because I thought I was an alcoholic. I went in because I was like, we're idiots. He's in there. I'm in there. You know what I mean? Whatever. It'll be going to the county workhouse. So I went in there, and it was really kind of creepy. I mean, like they're like taking my blood pressure every 10 seconds. And I would just, like, be laughing, like, I think I'm an alcoholic. I'm 18 years old. I mean, give me a break. I'm like, what do you want me to get the shakes, you know? And I thought it was a big joke, you know? And I didn't really have the physical. I mean, I would get pretty sick a lot of times, but I didn't really get the shakes. But, you know, I damn sure had the physical. I mean, not the physical, but the mental obsession. Because I'll tell you, I was in there about 4 hours, and it was like, you know what I mean? It's like, what do you do, man? Like, I'm pacing around chain-smoking cigarettes. Thank God you can still smoke in treatment, though. And, you know, just chain-smoking cigarettes and pacing around. Like, man, I've been here like 8 hours. You know what I mean? I was, like, ready to lose my mind, you know? And I kept being like, well, I can quit anytime I want. I just don't want to, you know? And so I was in there about a week, got a pass, and I was, you know, I was all excited about how I was going to be sober 30 days. You know what I mean? And when I get out, I'm going to get so tore up, and it's going to be awesome. It's going to be like being 14 again, you know? And, you know, and that's what that was my whole goal of going in there. And anyway, I'm in there like a week. I get a pass. I get some weed. I go back in there. I'm getting high in this hospital. You know, I know they're going to do urine tests, and I'm wanting to have a good report for court. And I'm like, why am I getting high? You know what I mean? It's just like they said. So anyway, the good thing about that place was they took us to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they brought it. We'd go to Monday Night Young People's, which was a AA meeting in Cincinnati that was like 400 people, and it was pretty wild, man. It kind of blew my mind, you know. And it took the whole thing of me being, you know, too young away, kind of. And then the other thing, though, they had speakers come in. They had speakers come in all the time. And they blew me away. They really did. Because especially back when I got sober, I mean, you hear people get shock treatments and going to reform school like their whole lives, you know what I mean? Because back then, all they did, they just beat the hell out of alcoholics. You know? You know, there wasn't really any treatment centers. I mean, the old-timers back then, you hear them like, yeah, I was, you know, you could tell they were drunks, and they put them in reform school and beat them, you know? And then when they got old enough, they went to prison. And get shock treatments. I mean, people that had shock treatments for alcoholism, they'd be like, they'd take them over, they'd be like, whose house is this? They'd be like, it's your house. You know? Who are these kids? Your kids, you know? And I don't know, it was just wild. My first speaker I'll never forget, I always talk about him, a guy named Bill. Bill had been sober 30 years, scared the hell out of me. It was like, you know, it was like the Birdman from Alcatraz. You know what I mean? That's what it sounded like to me. I was like, 30 years in AA. How much worse can it get, you know? I mean, people who had a year creep me out, but, you know, and he talked about they had Vicks inhalers in the 50s, and you could break them open, and they had Benzedrine in them, and you could speed. And that's all I thought about the whole meeting, because there was a Walgreens down the street from the hospital I was in. I thought, man, maybe I can get the Walgreens to get that Vicks in and get a buzz. And he was like, no, they don't do that anymore, kid. And seriously, that's what I liked about AA. All I was like, man, I'm going to go to these meetings, and when I get out, man, these people know shit. You know what I mean? I mean, I would come to meetings, and seriously, they're like talking about how to get prescriptions from doctors. I'd be like taking notes, you know, mental notes. I mean, not one thought of getting sober. And just thinking, you know, I mean, what's cool is these people are pretty cool. So, like, you know, when I'm like 50 or something and I need to come to AA, I can come back. You know, I mean, I had no idea what my problem was or how serious things were. I thought I might be psychotic. That was the only thing I did think. Because, I mean, I just hated everybody. I didn't care about anybody. And I would... I would always make these outbursts in groups, and anybody's been to trip, you know how serious they get these groups in. I mean, I thought the groups were so retarded, and I mean, I would always end up getting in a lot of trouble and confronted and stuff in the groups. They'd go, how do we handle these family problems? I'd be like, 357 Magnum, you know, and they'd go, that's not funny, Bill, you know, and man, it really dreamed me out, you know, it hurt my feelings. But you know, I heard these different speakers, and you know, I hear men, I hear women, I hear young, I hear old, I hear people that were educated, people that weren't educated, and that part was interesting to me, you know what I mean? Because I was sure that an alcoholic, you know what I mean, you had to be in prison or whatever and all those things, and I was finding out that that wasn't the case, you know what I mean? They even had a priest that was an alcoholic, used to come out of that's kind of weird, that's Catholic. They took us to a lot of meetings, you know, but again, like I said, I wasn't done. I mean, I'm getting high in the place and everything. I got out and I thought, you know, if I ever need AA, I'll go, you know, I was even more on the fence like that. I had some pot at home, and I told my counselors, like, I had, and they're like, well, we can call your folks. I'm like, well, no, I need to take care of this. And you already know what that means. I took care of it, all right. I got out, and my plan was, you know, I'm going to do it till midnight, and that'll be my sobriety date. And I looked over the clock, and it was 12:01, so I was like, well, tomorrow night. And a week later, you know, I'm drinking, just like they said. And it was hilarious when I drank. It wasn't hilarious, but the crazy thing about it was, you know, it's how I rationalized it. I went in and they just came out with the 32-ounce King cans, and I never had one. That was my excuse. I was like, man, I never had a King can. You know, so I paced around like a wild animal in front of the beer cooler for like a half hour. I don't know why somebody called the police. I kept getting it out. I get in line, I put it back, get it out from the line, put it back. I did it like 25 times, but I'm not an alcoholic. So, I started drinking, you know, and AA irritated me. The other thing they were big on is first drink gets you drunk. I knew that was. And if you don't take the first drink, you can't get drunk. Oh, that's a good one. Tricky. You know what I mean? I mean, AA would just irritate me. And I think, you know, it's good for these old, burnout, stupid people, but, you know, not me. And, you know, they're always like, it's primary illness, it's progressive, it always gets worse, blah, blah, blah. You know, you'll end up dead, insane, in prison. And 3 months later, I had handcuffs on, and I was going to prison, and I couldn't believe, the worst thing was going back and seeing the same people in AA. You know what I mean? They're like, hey, you're back. It's awful quick. You know what I mean? I just wanted to punch them. You know, the volunteers from the young people's group, they would come, you know, they did a thing called meet and greet. They were from the young people's group. I remember telling this guy, we're still friends, actually, and I told him what was going on. I said, man, I'm going to prison because, man, it sucks for you, you know, kind of thing. I was like, he's still sober, but I wanted to kill him. But anyway, I don't know. I mean, they had me. You know, I still didn't think I was an alcoholic, but I thought, you know, I'm a bad person, and my God concept at that time was like, this is God's punishment for me to be sober in AA. The only thing that I care about is drinking. That's the only time I feel human. And he's going to take that. I mean, I love thinking about it now because it's so twisted. I really believe, like, things were like that. You know, me and God had this thing going on. You know, like, he hated me so much. He's like, man, you know, the only thing I like is drinking. He's going to take that. You know, and it was because I, you know, was so bad in my family. So, you know, all you hear in here is get a sponsor, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. And it was all speaker meetings. And I'm grateful for that, because they were like I said, they were fascinating. I hear all kinds of crazy stuff. Anyway, this guy talked, man, and I tell you, when he talked, I knew that his brain was like my brain. You know what I mean? I heard him talk, and right away I knew that was going to be my sponsor. And I'm happy to say I've had the same sponsor, you know, for the last, I guess, 25 years. You know, and I got him as a sponsor, and he kind of freaked me out. I don't know, man. He would just say weird stuff to me and laugh about it. You know, and I think that's funny. You know, he was always laughing, too. Everything was hilarious. And I was trying to get him to, like, go to court with me, you know. And I thought, man, if I get this guy to go to court with me, it'd be awesome. You know, I want to go to prison. He's like, Bill, don't worry. They got plenty of AA in prison. So when you get it to prison, you'll be able to go to meetings. And I still can't believe he's still my sponsor. You know, I can't believe I ever talked to him again, to tell you the truth. And it's funny. I worry about things I say to guys. I don't know why I ever worry. And when I had 5 years, it really tripped me out. Because he goes, you know what you taught me? I said, what? He said, you can never say anything wrong when you're drunk. Because that night I told you, there's plenty of AAs in prison. I was driving home thinking, man, that was kind of harsh. Because, you know, I shouldn't have told that guy that. But, you know, it's exactly what I needed to hear. Because I would have totally been just working him for stuff, you know. And he just, oh man. Then when I got him, I thought we were going to do some deep therapy, and I was going to explain to him how my parents had ruined my life, and we're going to get some kind of court case or something, you know, get some kind of compensation. And he wouldn't buy any of that. All he would talk about is the big book, you know. I mean, everything he said, big book. Isn't there something a little newer? Like, I think they got this Hazelden book. I like reading from the treatment center. I like that Hazelden book, you know. I was like, I like the 24-hour a day book myself. He's like, no, I don't read that book. And every time I think I was going to impress my sponsor with something smart, man, it seemed like he just slapped me in the... I mean, he didn't, but that's the way I took everything, because I was so sensitive, you know. But he was like, read the doctor's book. So I started reading that, and, you know, whatever. And the phenomenon of craving, he's always talking about that. And then, you know, the fourth step, I remember reading that and just about, you know, I would read that and it would almost make me have a heart attack. Because I would just think, and it's funny, and I think it happens to everybody. When you read that, the first time I believe every alcoholic does this, your list is right there. Everything that's important is right there in your mind. You know what I mean? And you're thinking, no way, am I telling people this stuff? You know? And, you know, because it keeps us different. And I don't know, he convinced me to do it. Finally, I did it because I kept drinking, you know. I left out some stuff. I ended up going to jail. I didn't go to prison. And I got out, and I got drunk after having about 6 months of sobriety. And I couldn't believe it, you know. Every day, I was like, God, please. You know, I mean, the way I prayed, it was dramatic. But, you know, I'd be like, please, you know what I mean? I will do anything if you give me God to go into prison, you know. And it happened. And then, like, 2 days later, man, I mean, I'm going to meetings telling everybody how grateful I am to be sober and everything. And then, like, 2 days later, I'm sitting in a meeting, and that starts, man, that alcoholism. You know what I mean? It's like, I shouldn't have to sit in this stupid meeting with all these people drinking coffee night after, listening to these stupid stories night after night, you know? And I went and drank, you know? And how I did it is I went with my old friends and told them all about AA, told them how wonderful AA was, you know, how I can't drink. I won too many thousands, not enough. I said, give me a beer. And they're like, what? You just told us all the reasons you can't drink. I said, I know, AA brainwashed me. And I got drunk, and oh my God, it was horrible. It wasn't fun at all. I mean, I just sat there, and what I had put together, I always call it, you know, it's like Wheel of Fortune, the Wheel of Alcoholism. There's no good prizes on it. You know, there's just stuff like, you know, bad stuff. And I mean, I knew the unpredictability. I'd be drinking, I'd think, what are you going to do tonight, Einstein? Are you going to do rob a nun, maybe? Maybe you'll beat up some little kid and steal his lunch money. I mean, I knew it was just going to be something humiliating and embarrassing, you know? So it was just terrible. And it's probably the first part that I related to in the big book. So I would try to read it, and it just didn't make sense to me. It was the part where it says, you know, he will know loneliness as few do. He can't imagine life. You can't imagine life with or without alcohol. You know, it'll be the jumping off point or something like that. And I remember reading that, I thought, man, that's where I'm at. And I would just sit up at night, and I wouldn't go to meetings. I would just stay home, man. I'd go to like one meeting a week and come and just ditch, you know. Like, people would be like, man, you're so lucky to be here. And I'd be like, yeah, it's really awesome. You know what I mean? I'd be smoking cigarettes. That's why I love people that hate AA. Those are my favorite people, because that's how I was. I would just mope and bitch and complain. I'd be like, yeah, I'm in AA, and I'm going to prison in a couple months. It's awesome, you know? And, but you know what I mean? They just like, well, good to see you, get some coffee, you know what I mean? They just let me be miserable, you know what I mean? They'd mess with me a little bit, but not, you know what I mean? They didn't give me a hard time. They're like, well, we're glad you're here, you know? And I don't know, it's just a trip. And I'm just grateful. So different times I hear people say that, you know, older people, like, told them they were too young. I never had that experience. I'm grateful for that. They just, you know, welcome me in, man. They're like, a drunk's a drunk, you know? So I did this four step because I'd stayed dry 8 months. And all I left out, the last time I did anything was I was going to Icky Paw in 1985. And I was telling all these guys about, I'm going to Icky Paw. And the guy was getting high. I go, no, man, I don't get high, man. It don't do anything for me. But you can get high just because I quit, you know. I told him all this crap. And he gets high. I go, let me check it out. And I got high. And so I got high like the day before I went to Icky Paw. I felt totally retarded. And but, you know, something happened there. Just where I saw these people stand sober, you know what I mean? And the theme of the conference was a life worth living. And I don't know why I'm even talking about this, but I didn't drink for 8 months. But I wanted to really bad, or blow up the post office. I wanted to do something, you know, because I couldn't sleep, and I was just crazy. And my sponsor worked third shift, and I was really lucky in that, because I would become willing to call and ask for help around 3 a.m. Around 3 a.m., TV's gone, no internet, didn't exist, you know. And I mean, you're just crazy. You're just straight up crazy. I mean, you guys have so many distractions there. There was no, I mean, you know, I might, maybe had an Atari if I was lucky. But it was just straight up me and this thing up here sizzling, you know. And, I mean, anyway, I'd call him and I'd just be like, what's going on? And he'd just, you know, hey, big book, doctor's opinion. Did you do a four-step? Did you write a four-step? Did you write a four-step? Like, Jesus. And he would put me to sleep. That's why I called him. He bored me so much talking about AA. So I would call him to put me to sleep. And then finally, I don't know, I just got to this point where I was like, okay, I believe this guy. Or not that even I believe this guy, but I do believe I've never really done what they say to do, the program of action. And I was like, so I'll try to do it just so I can prove that AA doesn't work. And that's his story as well. I was like, I'm going to do everything he says to do. You know, he smoked cool cigarettes. I started smoking cool cigarettes. I did everything he did, man. And you know, it's funny. I wonder why I liked him, you know, but I did. Anyway, I wrote everything down. And I thought that I was going to shock him and he was going to be like, go to the mental hospital, get out of here. AA can't help you. Instead, he just laughed and said I was a drunk, you know. And I don't know. My life has never been the same since. I mean, I've trusted that man with my life. After, I mean, he knows everything about me, you know what I mean? Stuff that I couldn't even, you know, I mean, I could hardly think about myself without needing a drink, you know what I mean? And I told him the stuff, and he's like, yeah, you're just a drunk. And, you know, it was amazing. And that's when he told me that, you know, if I just put AA first, everything would work out, you know? And I went to a meeting, and somebody said, yeah, I hear you need a job. And I said, yeah. And that was my first job. I worked there 2 years, and I was at another meeting. A nicer meeting, nicer part of town. I was trying to find a better job. Anyway, some girl that I hate says, you ought to go down here and apply. And I was like, I don't like her. I'm supposed to go check it out. I worked there for 12 years. How I got to Florida, some guy that I was resenting because he got this fat job was like, you want to move to Florida? I was like, no. And he goes, well, I'm going to fly you down for an interview. I'm like, you're going to fly me down for an interview for a job I don't know how to do? Okay, I'll go. And that's how I got here. And I've been waiting to get fired from that job for the last 10 years. So, you know, all I can tell you is keep showing up, keep going to meetings, get a sponsor, read the big book, and more than anything, just get into action. Get involved in something. You know what I mean? For me, it was what my sponsor did. My sponsor is big into jails and prisons. That's what we did. And I still do it. I still go to prison. I still go to detox. I still go to AA. And, you know, I do it because I love it. You know, I love being here with you guys. I think I'm out of time. Am I out of time? I'm out of time. Yeah? No? Yeah. Do I have anything else to say? Probably not. Thanks.
Hi, Monica Alcoholic. This is Dr. Bob's last message, delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are two or three things that flash into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member, the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.